We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ebner Meriz is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Ebner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Ebner Meriz, we'll hear from Ebner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is today. They chat about topics like the state of boxing, Ebner's journey from a kid on the streets to boxing champ, sports, music, culture, and family life. So listen to On the Hook with Ebner Meriz wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish are out on Wednesdays. Check it out. That's another great podcast on the Blue Wire Network.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway! Lays it in! Zach LaVine does it again!
A late shot on the middle.
The minister, Larry Markkanen.
The crossover. LaVine!
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young!
What's going on, everyone? This is Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We are brought to you by the Blue Wire Network, by Indeed, and by Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. Jason, the Lakers are NBA champions, and the NBA bubble is finally over.
It is. The Lakers 1-6, completely dominated Game 6. The Heat clearly left it all out on the floor in Game 5. Props to the Heat for fighting. We will talk a bit about the Lakers and the finals and all that legacy, all that fun stuff a bit later in this pod. But first, there was also actually some Bulls news today on after this final day of the NBA season, which was a very long and unique NBA season. Billy Donovan apparently doing some house cleaning on the coaching staff. He let people know today, the Bulls announced it officially. We have four assistants are out of here. That would be Dean Cooper, Nate, is it Lonser, Lancer? I'm not totally sure how to say his name. Roy Rogers, and then Karen Stack Umloff. That's four key assistants from the last staff. It looks like that Chris Fleming is staying around. AK, I believe, has a relationship with Chris Fleming. Chris Fleming ran the bubble. So it sounds like, for now at least, Chris Fleming will be on Billy Donovan's staff. I can't say I have any big, grand thoughts about this, but I think it's good that Billy's going to pick most of his own guys, even if Fleming is still there. Fleming's there just for his relationship with AK. I mean, that's totally fine with me. I feel like we lauded the Fleming hire when they made it last year. I know it didn't really work out, but that's probably a lot because of Jim Boylan. So house cleaning on the Bulls coaching staff, which ironically enough, also if we look at Jerry Reinsdorf's other team today, also a house cleaning in the Chicago White Sox organization. Rick Renteria, poor Ricky Renteria. Basically the same thing happened with the Cubs when he was there. He was their A to B coach during the rebuilding years. And now that the White Sox look ready to contend, he's fired. And they also fired Don Cooper, longtime pitching coach, which is an absolute shock. I know there was some talk about some of the possible replacements with the White Sox. I know Ozzy's out. Apparently Jerry said he's out. And I saw Tony La Russa's name, which is crazy. AJ Hinch, whatever. We're not going to talk too much about the White Sox here, but just kind of funny that on this Monday, day after the NBA season ends, we get this house cleaning basically throughout both of Jerry's organizations.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm shocked by both. I thought, you know, from the White Sox perspective, they had to make the Renteria move. I never imagined they would fire Don Cooper, who had been their pitching coach since, I think, 2002. So he had been around basically as long as Paxson had been around. It's, it's something that John Paxson and Jim Paxson, to that extent, are like two of the guys still left over after all these firings. But I got to say, like, credit to Jerry Reinsdorf. These are words I never thought I would say, but like, he is spending money when he needs to. I was really worried the White Sox were going to sort of rest on their laurels. They went to the playoffs last year. You know, you could say they were ahead of schedule and just retain Ricky Renteria again, also Cooper. Instead, they're both out. And then you look at the Bulls, like, they had all these people still under contract. They picked up Lozner's extension in May or his season. And Roy Rogers still had 2 years left on his contract. And he was regarded as like a pretty well-paid assistant, I believe, when he came over from Houston last year. So Reinsdorf is eating a lot of money just in all these people he's letting go. And then in whoever they're going to want to sign as assistant coaches. Like, I'm sure this was part of getting Donovan to agree to come to the organization, that he would be able to have power remaking his staff, changing around personnel. So this is all great. Now, we should talk about a few of these assistant coaches they lost. Nate Lozner, everything I heard about him, he was supposed to be great. He was the Bulls G League coach with the Windy City Bulls, and I believe he was born with a partial left arm too. So he was kind of an inspiring story. And, you know, and everyone I've talked to has always – around the team, around the organization, has always said that he was a really sharp basketball mind, really great student of the game. So definitely hoping the best for him. And then Karen Stack Umloff was the Bulls' first ever female assistant coach. And she had been with the organization since Michael Jordan's rookie year in 1984. She was a former player at Northwestern. She was a standout there. I saw her during All-Star Weekend. She was coaching the Basketball Without Borders teams that had, you know, a couple future NBA guys on them. So hopefully, you know, all the assistants who were let go, they're able to find work. You know, a lot of them have been around the Bulls organization for a long time. And, you know, while we're happy that the Bulls are cleaning house and that they're going to be able to bring new people in, it also comes with the loss of jobs. And especially in this moment in history, that's never a good thing. It's always really sad. But hopefully, you know, these people have been taken care of by Reinsdorf on their way out the door. And it's a very awesome thing for Bulls fans and White Sox fans that Jerry Reinsdorf, during a time when he easily could have hid behind the financial losses that stemmed from the pandemic, actually decided to pay up. And I think the Bulls and the White Sox will both be better for it.
Are you surprised that Fleming is sticking around?
No, because I knew he, you know, worked with Karnišov is in Denver, so I'm not shocked by that one. I have to imagine he also is one of the league's more highly paid assistants. I believe, you know, it was reported that he was a pretty big money assistant when the Bulls got him from the
draft. He was interviewing as well for, I think, head coaching jobs too.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm shocked by that, but in general, I think that, you know, it's really impressive that Reinsdorf was able to actually give Billy Donovan some autonomy, and, you know, same thing happened with the White Sox.
Yeah, definitely good. In terms of the Bulls, we'll talk a bit about more a little later in this pod about kind of what comes next for them. They did just wrap up their 3-week minicamp. As I mentioned, Chris Fleming apparently ran the Bulls, like, mini bubble that they had. I did a little thing recap of it for Bloggable for last week. It looks like they had a fun old time. They had, like I said, it was a little mini bubble. They had to do plenty of the COVID precautions. I think they stayed at like a hotel. They had a special thing at the Advocate Center. They set up like fun and games, like arcade stuff and like ping pong. And they had a few group events. There was some rumors that like Lowry and Coby White were looking pretty good there, but take all that stuff with a grain of salt. It sounds like the basketball is pretty sloppy. So good for them to get out on the court. They needed to get that time. Them and those other, the so-called delete eight, the teams that have not been playing since March. I mean, just a huge layoff. It's good to get them back on the court. It seems like the guys were really happy to be back out there. I know Zach had some quotes. Lowry had some quotes as well. Lowry talked about his future. He claims he wants to stay around. I mean, we've talked about Lowry's future. We talked about it with Darnell on our last pod about his possible extension. They asked him about that. He said basically what you're going to say, like, you know, like, I can't worry about that. I'm just going to worry about what I can worry about. I'll let my agent handle that kind of stuff. We've talked about how we don't think Lowry's going to get a new contract this offseason, but we will see. But yeah, they are the Bulls. I think they finished that, I think, last week. And then it's just kind of, we'll see from there. Again, we will talk about that later. Do you have any leftover thoughts from the Bulls and their mini bubble? Anything you heard about that or read about that?
Not really. I feel like we are on the brink of a truly new era of Chicago Bulls basketball. Yeah. It's weird to say. So I think, we're just going to see what comes this offseason. There's a lot still up in the air as the finals ended last night and as the Bulls transition into the offseason. We don't know what the salary cap's going to be like. We don't know when free agency is going to be in. We don't know when the season's going to begin. So there's a lot of balls up in the air right now. And I think that, from our perspective, we'll probably be focusing on the draft after we touch on the end of the season later in this episode. But we don't really know what the Bulls are going to look like. So it's hard to sort of, make projections about the roster right now.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the finals a bit. We'll start with a losing team. We'll start with our guy, Jimmy Butler, who played his ass off all series. Game six, he just did not have it. I mean, we saw him after that miraculous game five performance. He played 47 minutes. When he walked off that from his presser, and he was like limping off. He looked like an old man walking off, and it was like he really left it all on the floor in that game five. He still almost did get a triple double in game six, but he only took like 8 or 9 shots, I think, and he had like 12, 7 and 7, or something like that. But I mean, just overall, an incredible performance from Jimmy Butler in these playoffs. In the final, especially in the finals, he took his game to a whole nother level, basically won the Heat 2 games almost by himself with incredible triple-double performances. He almost averaged a triple-double in the finals. If you look at game score, that Basketball Reference does, I think I saw that he was had like the 9th best NBA finals ever in terms of that game score stat. Goes toe-to-toe with LeBron and AD. If the Heat would have forced a game 7, you could have argued he could have had an argument for finals MVP, even if they would have lost. And just reading the coverage all across the league, we dealt with Jimmy with Chicago. We saw all the drama that he had with some of these other teams. But his time in Miami and this throughout this bubble and throughout this playoff run, just he's clearly just like totally just his stock has just gone way up. We've seen a lot of people just kind of just change their tune on Jimmy and that drama that did happen. I think a lot of people are looking at it a different way, just respecting him a lot more and his work ethic and just him as a player. Like I said, we just kind of saw that all across the national spectrum. It was a lot of fun to watch Jimmy do that. After game 3, I drunkenly bought the Jimmy Butler jersey, the blue Heat one, just because I got to rep my guy. It was just a lot of fun to watching him and this team. This Heat team just was a lot of fun, like really easy to root for. Between Jimmy, between a guy like Goran Dragic, even though he got hurt, Bam Adebayo, just a super fun player. They're young guys, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson got a lot of swagger. Duncan Robinson had a big game in game 5. So just shout out to the Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat for fighting this way, pulling off multiple upsets throughout the playoffs, and then taking this to 6. After that game 1, I thought it was going to be a sweep. The fact that the Heat won those 2 games behind Jimmy Butler's triple-doubles, absolutely incredible. Ricky, you were right. You said that you thought the Heat were going to get this to 6. I was totally wrong about that. Just talk about Jimmy, his awesome finals in this Heat team.
Yeah, I thought Dan Devine of The Ringer put it best. He tweeted that Jimmy Butler entered the bubble as an all-star and he left it as a fucking legend. And I think that's absolutely true. Like, he burnished his stock, like you said. He basically created a legacy for himself. Yep. During this finals run, and it really started, like, it started when they went against the Pacers, and they just obliterated the Pacers. Like, that wasn't even close. The Pacers actually got the 4 seed over the Heat. The Heat were the 5 seed, because Miami was sort of struggling in the seeding round. But as soon as the playoffs started, Jimmy was totally locked in, so they just destroy Indiana 4 straight. And then, I mean, that Bucks series was just legendary. Butler having the 40-point game 1 to begin that series. He was excellent throughout it. They totally dominate Milwaukee. And then, I think a lot of people, including me, thought that Boston would win the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
But no, and that wasn't, about Jimmy carrying the team on his back through that round. I think he only averaged 19 points a
game. Bam was incredible that series.
Tyler Hero had some great performances in that series.
Dragic.
But Butler was the engine, right? And that's something that I think about when I think about the Bulls now is like, and we've mentioned this a bunch of times on the podcast, but like what the Bulls need is an engine. Is someone like Jimmy Butler, an offensive initiator, a guy they can run everything through in the half court. And Butler, to me, man, he is just so likable. Like, it's almost crazy to think that he had such a polarizing reputation coming into this bubble run, really. And a lot of people, I think, maybe thought of him as selfish. And sure, Jimmy Butler probably made mistakes in terms of how he was dealing with teammates earlier in his career. I think that, you know, when you saw him interact with a lot of the young Heat guys, Hero especially, who he took under his wing from day one, the way he talked about Bam, his relationship was with Dragic was also one of like the ongoing storylines of the bubble and was just like a super feel-good relationship. He just seems like the ultimate teammate. And I think, you know, part of that is just like getting in your 30s and
maturation.
Maturing, you know, learning from your previous mistakes. But then on the court, it's like his ability to turn himself into a point guard, which he said he was going to do back in 2015. Everyone rolled their eyes at it. Even when he was doing it and was really good at it, people were still like, yeah, I don't know if he's a point guard, though. Yeah, that's what he did. He became a point guard. He was like scoring or assisting on pretty much every Heat basket throughout this entire series. And it's just so remarkable to watch him play because he plays so passionately, yet he still doesn't turn the ball over. Like, he's always under control. He's always composed, yet he's playing, you know, 150% balls to the wall on every possession. So you see that type of guy and you think of like sort of the ethos that the Bulls always have prided themselves on, like toughness, grittiness, all these buzzwords that, you know, we used to associate with someone like Kirk Heinrich when he wasn't good anymore. Jimmy really personifies that type of language and those cliches. And it's just kind of wild that they ever traded him in the first place, just because like he has the attributes that I think the city likes to think it has in its citizens and that its sports teams like to think they have too, right? Especially the Bulls. So remarkable performance by Jimmy. I could not be happier for him. To watch him do it was just really satisfying and validating, I thought. And, you know, go over through his numbers on the 2017 Bulls. Like, those numbers are totally unassailable. He was easily a top 10 player, probably like the sixth or seventh or fifth best player in the league.
Yeah, I wouldn't go top five, but if you look at those advanced stats, he was probably like seven or eight, like in terms of just like impact. Like, a lot of people like wouldn't think of him as that, but if you look at the, like the impact stats, even his basic stats, they were all like six, seven, eight, like around there. I mean, absolutely. It's just that, and especially with the Bulls sucking that year and being so mediocre, it just kind of ruined it for like the perception of him. And then there were obviously some of the issues with the young teammates, so that like that just kind of colored some people's opinions about him. But he was legitimately absolutely incredible that season.
For sure. And he's just so likable to me in general. Like, I'm sure like he probably has a little bit of an ego. Well, guess what?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's a self-made superstar and he's awesome. He should have an ego. And I think that, you know, like part of that has probably helped fuel his success in some ways. But in terms of how he plays the game, he plays a very egoless game on the court to the point where like sometimes he's passing up wide open layups. Because I don't know if he like just prefers to get the assist or if he's being coached to like pass up a two for the three or if he's just like not confident finishing sometimes. But yeah, he plays such an unselfish game on the court and an egoless game on the court. And he plays so passionately but still plays under control. And it's remarkable. And I'm glad the rest of the world got to see what we got to see at the start of his Bulls career. And, you know, with Rondo playing a great game six for the Lakers, too, two of the three alphas. On full display in the NBA Finals. Bulls in six, baby. We still believe. It's so
incredible. Yeah. But yeah, the point about Jimmy being like self or almost too unselfish times. Yeah. There are times where you're like, Jimmy, go get the buckets yourself, because the couple games that they won, that's what he did do. Like, he took over down the stretch. The duel in game five against LeBron down the fourth quarter was incredible, because it looked like the Heat were dead in the water. They were falling apart, throwing up awful shots. And then all of a sudden, Jimmy just starts scoring at will, whether he was making tough shots, getting to the line, hit those last free throws at the end. Just that duel was incredible. But then there were a few of the other games where like he still put up big numbers, but like not the big scoring numbers. And that happens a lot. I mean, he only averaged like 20 points a game, but he even talks about like how he prefers to like get the other guys involved and how he doesn't feel like he always has to be like the alpha scorer there. And that's just another level to his maturation process. And I mean, it's probably a good outlook to have, because considering the minutes he was playing, I mean, he was playing like Tom Thibodeau minutes, like 46, 47 minutes in these finals. Like, You just can't be like that. He's not LeBron. You can't be playing like those huge minutes and scoring like 30, 35 points every night. He's got to sometimes rest himself. And we saw him at the end of that game five when he had that viral image now of him like leaning over the edge of like the court and just looking absolutely dead. And but like you said, that's just like the blue collar thing that Chicago people like to love. Like he theoretically really should have been like the perfect guy for the Bulls, but I digress. That's great. It was awesome watching Jimmy Butler play, and it was a really fun series. Before we talk about go to the Lakers aspect of this and them winning the title and LeBron and legacy stuff, let's take a quick word from our sponsors, Indeed and BetOnline. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering Cash Considerations listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. This offer is valid through December 31st. The wait is over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals, the team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use that promo code BlueWire at BetOnline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We are back. Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. But right now we are talking about the NBA Finals. We just gave Jimmy Butler some love. Let's give some love to the champs, the Lakers. Obviously, being the Lakers, being LeBron James, Anthony Davis, after the whole AD drama. Always a lot of drama around the Lakers, and after AD forces his way to the Lakers, plays an incredible finals, incredible playoffs to help LeBron James win title number 4. That's title number 17 for the Lakers. LeBron James won finals MVP. I believe he's won finals MVP in each of his titles. Yep. I'm probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's 4 for him. I mean, he's won titles now with three different teams. And LeBron, he's 35 years old, year 17. Some people were doubting him. Apparently, you might have been doubting him a little bit. I thought they'd get to the finals and then lose to the Bucks. I think was my pick all along, and the Bucks just fucked me over. But I always figured the Lakers would be good. I know, and there's been like there was a whole like we believe Lakers movement, and I mean there were some weirdos who were like thought the Lakers weren't going to be good at all. Now, you definitely were not a part of that, but just some doubting. I'm just going back, like hilariously listening to the people like thinking about like, oh, the Blazers can like maybe beat them in a series. And then like it almost happened every round, but the Lakers just came together. They romped through the Western Conference, win each series in 5 games, even though they lost game one, I think in the first two. And then this series, they win in 6 games. The Heat gave them a good run, but ultimately LeBron was incredible. AD was incredible. AD, I think, had like almost shot like a 60-40-95 like shooting splits in these. I thought AD was possibly the finals MVP through like 4 games. LeBron's last couple games, I think, really cemented it for him. And LeBron, just again, year 17, 35 years old, doing what he's doing now. Absolutely incredible. So that obviously brings up a lot of the legacy stuff, the GOAT talk, and that stuff is like never going to go away. But I mean, LeBron, with each passing year, with all the accolades that he continues to add to his resume, just making that conversation that much more interesting. Let's talk about something you wrote just about the Lakers at SBNation.com right after this Lakers championship, just about him, LeBron, just kind of taking his final years, like the twilight of his career, into his hands and basically handpicking this Lakers roster, going back to AD and a clutch, essentially forcing this trade to the Lakers from the New Orleans Pelicans. And then a lot of the other guys they brought in. I mean, there's a ton of clutch guys on this roster. And then a guy like Rajon Rondo, who you brought up before, who had a great game six and was great throughout these playoffs, hashtag playoff Rondo. Just LeBron is kind of playing that GM role and it's like his imprints all over this roster. Ricky, just kind of, I guess, go over what you wrote in this column and just like what you thought about this LeBron and this Lakers team.
Yeah, man. Like, I just go back to when he signed with the Lakers. The Lakers at that season, the previous 5 years, had won the fewest games in the NBA, like worse than, you know, the process era Sixers for at least part of that stretch. So they were coming off, I think, like a 35-win season when LeBron signed. And I remember thinking that there was no way LeBron was going to be able to do this. He was leaving the East to go to the West. The team was bad. It just, you know, it was going to be year 16 of his career. He had the injury then in year 16. He had a groin injury on Christmas, and then it lingered. They eventually shut him down for the season. I think a lot of people are looking at this championship now and thinking it was inevitable the whole way, though, you know, kind of like what we thought about the peak Warriors. Well, of course, Warriors are going to win, whatever. But I don't know, man. Like, I think that if you, even when I looked at that completed roster following the AD trade, I still thought that their, like, 3 through 15 was about as bad as any in the entire NBA. So I was a doubter of this team, absolutely. And there's some videos going around on social media right now that are basically like compilations of all the people who doubted the Lakers in their bad tweets from earlier in the season. And I'm in there like twice. And I wrote when LeBron just made the finals with this team that I thought this was one of his most impressive accomplishments ever, getting to the finals with the Lakers. And I, you know, think the same thing, obviously, after they win the championship. So I honestly think that LeBron was incredible. He averaged 30 points a game for the series, I believe. Couldn't make a free throw. Shot 60% from the foul line. But, you know, we forget that he led the NBA in assists during the regular season, since the regular season seems so long ago. He was killing it on the glass. He averaged like 12 boards. He was the, you know, very much the engine of their offense the entire way. And I think that, you know, this, I think a lot of people want to sort of diminish this accomplishment because he was able to like get AD and Davis was so good. And then people are like, wow, you know, great accomplishment, LeBron. You won with the second best player in the league on your team too. But there's something to be said just for like LeBron putting the pieces in place. And I feel like the one thing about LeBron that doesn't get talked about that much is that he just sort of understands what's not going to work and what's not going to fly in the finals. And I go back to that 2018 finals loss when he was with the Cavs his last year with Cleveland. You know, that was the year J.R. Smith had the epic boneheaded play in game one. And, you know, after game three, I think LeBron was talking about how they needed to find more players with high basketball IQ. I think he mentioned Rondo directly and then he ends up landing Rondo. But I think it's really impressive. Like this whole, the whole way LeBron went about winning this championship, I think is super impressive. Like as I wrote, the Lakers did not need to sell LeBron on the Lakers. Like when LeBron entered free agency in 2010, you had, you know, Pat Riley put his rings on the table and Gar Foreman, you know, get in the wrong cab and show up late and probably not
give him a nice PowerPoint
to his computer on his PowerPoint presentation. But this time, like, no one needed to convince LeBron to sign with the Lakers, right? Like, LeBron was basically like, hey, Lakers, I'm going to come and we're going to win the championship. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, you know, you can, I think it's weird that some people are like criticizing him for doing it with AD. Like, he got AD. He got that buy-in. Like, when Kawhi Leonard tried to get Jimmy Butler, Jimmy told him no. He had to settle for Paul George. Like, LeBron got the buy-in from AD. AD also had some weird comments about free agency after the series.
He did.
So, like, I assume that AD is going to be in LA long-term. Like, players just generally want to end up in Los Angeles. So, especially with his injury history, it seems like a no-brainer for me to, like, take a long-term contract from the Lakers. But, you know, we'll see. Like, don't forget that Kyrie Irving once wanted to leave LeBron, even after they won a championship and forced his way out. So, I think, you know, LeBron really deserves a lot of credit. Like, he identified certain guys like Rondo. He wanted JaVale, you know, guys who he thought could help him in these situations and in these big moments. And I thought KCP was probably their third best player. That's another clutch guy. He was really good in these finals and throughout the playoffs just in terms of being a role guy. And, you know, at the end of the day, while we, I think a lot of us focused on the Lakers' shortcomings, just in terms of like their roster setup, and you know, there were times when you know Danny Green looked terrible, and throughout the season, like all of these role players looked relatively unimpressive, and it was really just LeBron and AD powering it the whole time. But we were sort of forgetting about their defense, and defensively is how they won this series. I mean, they had an epic defensive performance in Game 6. Yes, the Heat were gassed. They were running on fumes, no doubt, but the Lakers' defense had a lot to do with that, and their performance throughout the playoffs was really what carried them. I think LeBron found a higher level defensively. I think AD played like the best defensive player in the world while he was in the bubble. So, you know, remarkable run, and the fact that LeBron is still making his GOAT argument into year 17, like, are they going to win again next year? I'll tell you right now, if they have Anthony Davis, I'm not going to bet against them next year like I did this year, because they, you know, they proved me wrong. They showed how good they were, both, you know, by finishing with the number one seed in the Western Conference going into the bubble. And then
that I did not expect. I will say I definitely doubted them winning like the West, getting the top seed. I figured they'd maybe kind of slow play it, and they'd find their groove in the regular season, and then they'd maybe pick it up a notch. But the fact that they were like really good all season was definitely something I probably did not expect as much.
Yeah, I think it's a really impressive title any way you look at it. And, you know, I think it's just unavoidable to talk about the GOAT debate. And you had some good tweets, some good comments on it earlier today, Jason. So I'll give you the floor. Like, obviously, after LeBron wins this title and after LeBron accomplishes anything else the rest of his career, people are just going to be stacking him up to MJ. So Jason, yeah, how do you read into the GOAT debate and sort of what's your take on it?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I had some tweets, and like as a guy, as us, as just Chicago guys who grew up with Michael Jordan, I think for us personally, like MJ, like is just his resume is just like almost unassailable. 6-0 in the finals, the clutch play, the general aura, the effect he had on the NBA. Like I just like for us, I just don't think like that can ever be surpassed, even by LeBron. But when you look at LeBron's resume, between all the finals he's been to with multiple different teams, we'll see how many he ends up winning. He'll have the finals. He'll have rings. He'll have finals MVPs. And then just the overall stats that he's going to put together. But he's probably going to be the leading scorer of all time. As long as he plays a few more years, he'll pass Kareem for number one on the scoring list. All his play, and then he'll probably end up with almost like 40,000 points, and then like all the rebounds and assists and all those other counting stats. Obviously, efficiency wise, he's always been great. He's been a great defensive player. So just like you look at it, and like MJ will always be like my GOAT. But and as someone who like did not like LeBron earlier after he spurned the Bulls and we had a little rivalry with him, like I've done like a 180. I very much respect LeBron for what he does on the court. The only thing I don't like about him is when he complains too much. He's a big complainer, but
he's complaining at an all-time high during these finals. I almost wrote something about it because I thought of the headline, LeBron James is the Michael Jordan of whining to the refs. And I'm like, should I write this story? But I decided not to.
Yeah, I mean, that he's definitely very annoying about that. But in terms of his actual play on the court, incredible. You could probably argue he's definitely the GOAT in terms of like overall skills just as a basketball player. And then obviously what he does off the court with his social statements, with the voting stuff. And that's also obviously great. Jordan was just obviously for us as Bulls fans, just totally special. And just the aura he had around the entire league, just like an unassailable resume to us. But I understand people who think LeBron James is the GOAT, and I totally get it. He's absolutely incredible. He's going to go down. Again, you know, he's still building his resume. I mean, he's 35, and he still probably have a couple peak years left. As you mentioned, with AD is going to be back. Like he made those weird comments after the game yesterday, but I mean, he's going to be back. He talked about, I think, recently he gave some quote to, I think, Chris Haynes about, like, I'd love to win like 9 more titles here, like with LeBron. I don't know if he actually meant with LeBron, but either way, like he'd love to win more titles in LA. I cannot imagine AD's going anywhere. So like you're looking at a couple more years with them playing at a high level, and they can add pieces this offseason. I mean, they could be even better next season. And credit to Frank Vogel. You talked about the defensive buy-in, like they're great defensively. And if they can add maybe a bit even more offensive punch to help in the half court, take a load off those guys, like they could win another couple titles together. And I mean, if LeBron gets to 5-6, maybe even more than that, I mean, it's going to be hard to argue that he's the GOAT. So, like, again, personally, my personal preference, MJ is always my GOAT, but, like, I totally get it if you say LeBron.
What's crazy about LeBron is starting in his second season, which was 2004-2005, that would be my senior year of high school. I think LeBron was 19 or 20 in that year.
Yeah, makes
sense. He averaged 27.2 points, 7.5 rebounds, 7 assists. He's been putting up those exact same numbers ever since. He's come into the league with no drop-off. And I don't know if you saw SportsCenter last night, but SVP interviewed him, and he asked him, there's a clip that's been going around, you know, how do you stack up yourself now versus yourself at 27? And LeBron was pretty convinced that he's better now than he was at 27.
Yeah.
I disagree with that, I think. But the fact that it's even debatable still, like, he averaged 30 a game in the finals. He absolutely dominated the game. Even though it looked like he did, he has, like, lost maybe half a step physically. Like, his elevator was so high in the first place that when he comes back down to, you know, mere mortal status a little bit, it's still super, like, he's just playing at an advantage because he started at such a great peak, just physically and athletically. And then in this series, I think he dominated with his mind, really. And his basketball IQ is just absolutely through the charts. You can see it in all these little moments where, like, he's basically anticipating where the ball is going to go, like, two rotations before it actually happens. And he's able to, you know, play disruptive in the passing lanes, which he did in these playoffs. Really his best defensive performance in the playoffs, probably since 16, but maybe even beyond that. He was great. And so, I don't know. I guess, like, to me, I don't want to say that LeBron could never pass Jordan. I personally believe Jordan's the greatest NBA player of all time because at the end of the day, it's all about dominance in your era. And I'm going to say that Jordan was more dominant in his era than LeBron, though. I mean, the fact that LeBron has been to 9 of the last 10 NBA finals and the fact that he's won 4 titles, then, you know, you wonder what, like, Jordan never had to go up against a team like the Warriors, that's for sure. None of the teams MJ faced were even in the Warriors' realm. And I think LeBron's title in 2016 with Cleveland is more impressive than any of Jordan's titles individually. That's just an objective view of it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you're just comparing who was more dominant in their era, I think LeBron was more dominant than LeBron, or I think Jordan was more dominant than LeBron in their respective eras.
Also, I was going to say LeBron losing in 2011 is obviously a big stain. Like, that's, like, the one legitimate stain on his resume. And I think that does have to be, like, taken into account. Like, the Heat were the clear favorites in that series. They should have won, and LeBron wilted against J.J. Barea. Like, I think that's – you can absolutely hold that against him. I think you can also argue that 2016 should basically maybe, like, erase that and more, considering what they did against a historic team. But – like, LeBron, MJ just never had that complete finals failure. And, like, the other LeBron finals losses, I do not hold against him. They were, again, all-time great Warriors teams, a great Spurs team with a terrible Cavs roster basically around him. He does have that one bad finals mark on his resume, and that is also something that's going to be held against him in these discussions.
For sure. So I was thinking about ways, like, you know, you're saying, you're, like, citing your bias, and you're being,
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
I absolutely do not believe LeBron could pass Jordan. So I was trying to think of ways how LeBron could pass Jordan in the eyes of most people. Getting the all-time scoring record is an obvious one, because what's everyone going to say as soon as he gets that record? He's a pass-first player who also has more points than anyone in NBA history, right? Like, you can already hear the talking points being said. So that's going to be one thing. I think getting another title or two would be...
I mean, if you got the six... If he matches MJ,
you know, even if he gets 5, and then the last thing that could boost his legacy long term, I think, would be playing with Bronny. Now, I guess I didn't really see what Bronny was doing on social media. Was he, like, posting a pic smoking or something?
That was not last night. That was recently, though. I think LeBron, like, called him out for doing that. It was something like that.
I didn't see LeBron's response, but everyone's jokes about it were really funny, I thought.
Yeah.
But, like, it's way too early to say if Bronny's going to make the league. If nothing else, though, like, the Lakers could sign him. Like, he'll be, you know, it wouldn't be a total affront. Like, we got Kostas Antetokounmpo getting a ring on the Lakers this year, so... There's probably going to be a time when LeBron plays with Bronny. And I think a lot of people are going to be like, all right, that's awesome. Like, we hated on this guy for a long time, but you got to admit it. Like, this is pretty dope. And I think that that's going to raise his legacy too. And, like, you know that that's going to happen. And you know that he's going to be the all-time leading scorer in league history. And I didn't think he was going to get another title, to be totally honest, because I just thought other teams were better than what the Lakers had. And LeBron got this title. So, you know, put it all together, and Jordan, to me, is still the greatest of all time, but damn, LeBron's close, and I thought, you know, Zach Lowe wrote a great article on this. You should go check it out if you haven't already. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably have checked it out. But one thing he wrote in there is one thing that I was thinking throughout watching The Last Dance is, like, LeBron is a lot more human than Jordan, both for better or for worse. Like, I feel like if me or you went to high school with LeBron and we're the same age, like, there's a decent chance that, like, we would have been friendly together or whatever, you know, not like good friends, but would have had a pleasant relationship with him somehow. And then, like, LeBron's more human in his failures too, obviously. But Jordan is just treated like a god who floats above the sport to the point where, like, people won't even consider it an argument. I think that that's a little ridiculous. Like,
well, let's talk about this in another way too. Looking at the game five, the end of game five, where LeBron makes the play that he has made his entire career, and I will give him credit for doing this. He has always done it. He always will make the play that he thinks is right. And he drives into four Heat players, and he makes a pass out to a wide-open Danny Green. And Danny Green just botched the three. Also, fuck all the people who are sending death threats to Danny Green and his fiance. You're absolutely crazy. Why are you doing that? Don't do that, crazy sports fans. Anyways, like, LeBron has always done that, and he always and people will always criticize him for it. Well, you know, like, MJ would never pass in that situation. Kobe would never do that, blah, blah, blah. And that goes into these GOAT talks, too, because MJ and Kobe were just absolute psychos on the court, and they would do crazy stuff. But even those two guys would sometimes make the right plays and pass. And I mean, we bring up the pass to Steve Kerr in 93. Jordan did not make the pass to John Paxson, but he passed it off to Pippen, who passed it to Grant, passed it to Paxson. But people will be like Jordan is like so, like you mentioned, the myth-making and mythology. Like, people will say that he never did it when he absolutely did it. And it was one of my tweets was like, people, The Last Dance happened, and you all watched it like a couple months ago. You saw Michael Jordan make a smart basketball play and make that kind of pass to a role player who then hit that kind of shot. And LeBron does that. He's done his whole career, and he's taken criticism for it, and it's always been stupid. Like, LeBron has hit game-winning shots. He doesn't have the game-winning, like, the finals game winners. And I think Lowe talked about this in that article. Like, he does not have those finals game winners like Jordan does. And, like, Jordan, he had the
one. Could have if Marquise Morris passed it to him.
Right, yeah. He could have. Yeah, absolutely. He was wide open. But that just, like, all plays in this discussion as well. Like, LeBron just, and in terms of, like, the human stuff, and, like, MJ was just, like, such a psycho. And he would take those, and the myth-making about it, like you mentioned, but again, yeah, I mean, it was just crazy when people will say, like, Jordan would never. And it's like, yeah, dude, he did. He's done it. Like, yeah, he has a lot of game winners. Like, he was an absolute killer. LeBron did not have, like, quite that killer instinct that Jordan does. But we also see LeBron making tons of shots, like, not necessarily, like, the last shot, but, like, in crunch time, he still dominates, like, all the time. So it's not like he doesn't have a clutch gene. He's just, like, if there's a final shot, he's going to do what he thinks is right, whether that's shoot it, whether that's pass it. And other guys, even MJ and Kobe, they would, while they, I feel like, would shoot it more often than not, there were other times where they would also pass the ball. So, like, that whole conversation was obviously goofy after game five, but I think it's just a credit to LeBron that he's never wavered on that. He's always played, like, his style like that, and he's always made the right play, and he makes it more often than not.
So, how would you say the criticism of LeBron changing teams negatively impacts him? Because he's changed teams, you know, four times. Do you think that that should be a credit to him? Do you think that that should be a knock against him? I think that that's part of kind of interesting section of his legacy where, like, you know, you could argue it where, well, you know, I'm sure LeBron maybe wouldn't have left Cleveland at all if his best teammates weren't, you know, Jonas Ilgauskas and Booby Gibson. Whereas what happens to Jordan if the Bulls don't trade Olden Polonese for Scottie Pippen? You know what I mean? So, like, you obviously need the organization to put guys around you. It's a team game, even if you're the best of all time. But I mean, I could also see, like, yeah, like, maybe there's more honor in sticking with a place and making it great every year you're there instead of running to a new destination every 4 years. I don't know. So
to that point, would, if, like, MJ was playing in this era and he was on a Bulls team that was whatever, never, I can't remember, when did they finally get to the second round? I can't remember exactly. I'd have to look that up again. But like, what if he was with the Bulls for 6-7 years and they've never made it? Do you think in this era he would actually stick around, or do you think he'd demand a trade?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, well,
I mean, back then, changing teams just like wasn't like it is now.
Well, here's the thing: like LeBron basically created like player empowerment in a lot of ways, and this what he did with the Lakers was like the most empowered he ever was. He basically built the entire team himself. He orchestrated all of this. The Lakers basically just had to be like, all right, cool. Yeah, like the Lakers were the beneficiary of LeBron's vision and not the other way around, right, for this one. And so I don't know, like, are you saying that, like, let's say Michael Jordan is a college freshman next year, and now he's growing up in a post-LeBron world where LeBron already wrote the rules for this, you know, generation star players and – yeah, it's like that's the other part of this debate, too, is that LeBron couldn't have existed without Jordan in a lot of ways, right? Like,
right.
The game improves the game over the course of time. And it is a fun debate. Like, I believe the GOAT is Jordan, but I don't really hold it against anyone if they think it's LeBron. And I also wouldn't hold it against anyone if they thought it was Kareem, to be honest, because Kareem had an absolutely insane career going back to like his, you know, his high school, college days, too, if you factor those in. So it's just fascinating. And yeah, more than anything, I think, you know, none of like LeBron really couldn't have existed without the stars that came before him. And it will be fascinating to see when LeBron's gone, finally, what the league is going to look like and how the next generation of superstars carries the mantle. What does Luka do? What does Zion do? What does Jason Tatum do?
It's still Giannis, and Giannis is what, 24?
Right, exactly. 25?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the GOAT discourse can be definitely super annoying and terrible, but I think if you approach it the right way, and I think Zach Lowe's column today did a great job doing that, as we mentioned, go read it if you haven't, then it can actually be interesting. And there was somebody got in my mentions yesterday who just kind of put it really well, just like how LeBron and like Michael MJ are just two just like totally different players, but like almost like the two GOATs just in their own way. Just, and I think that was like put it really well. Like maybe they're really not necessarily like, they're almost like co-GOATs just because they did it in totally different ways, but just both just totally dominant in their own eras and all that. It's, and yeah, I mean, we've rambled on for this GOAT discussion for a while now, so we'll move on and wrap it up here really quick. But it will definitely be interesting to see how LeBron finishes his career, how that resume ends up stacking up. As Bulls guys, as we've kind of mentioned, we love MJ. He's our GOAT. He's our guy. But LeBron is absolutely incredible. I respect the hell out of him. And we'll see how long he can go because he says he's got a few more years. It sure as hell looks like he's got a few more years. We'll see if he plays with Bronny down the line. But, yeah, it'll be really interesting. Let's wrap up here real quick. Just kind of what I guess what's next. The season is over, but and the bubble was a great success for the most part. We can tell at least better than probably what we thought. Like, just they had no positive tests really in the bubble. I mean, for players. I mean, we don't necessarily. I think Adam Silver admitted like there were some like employees and stuff like Disney employees and stuff like that who tested positive. But for the most part, for what they went out to do, a huge endeavor. This worked out pretty well. They finished the season. They named a champion. But now there's still so much work to do looking ahead to next season. We have the draft in about a month scheduled for November 18th. It looks like free agency is going to be around November 30th / December 1st, something like that. You mentioned before, we don't know the salary cap. We don't know when next season is going to start. I think it looks like they're looking at possibly like Martin Luther King Day, which I think is January 18th, but that's not set in stone. There's still just a lot of fluidity here with these conversations. John Hollinger put out a big article in The Athletic today looking at some of these scenarios, talking about just the season because they want to play 82 games, but they want to get it in like before next football season starts because I think we've seen with some of these bad ratings going up against football games, like the NFL is king, football is king, the NBA just can't match up with that in terms of TV ratings. So like, they'd like to get 82 games in, but they want to finish it in a reasonable time frame before the NFL starts again. We've seen kind of some crazy ideas talking about like them playing like baseball-esque like series against teams in their division and stuff like kind of that kind of stuff, which could have a pretty big impact depending on which division you're in terms of like the strength of schedule. So like they're talking about all these different things, and I guess they would like to have fans in the stands, but I mean, who knows what happens with that either because we're still waiting on a possible vaccine. So there's just so much up in the air right now. It's just absolutely kind of crazy. Ricky, did you have any takeaways from that Hollinger article or just like what you see coming next for next season and beyond?
No, I have no idea, because I don't think the league really knows what's coming next season and beyond. And we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, the idea of like playing series next year against teams, like baseball style series, to essentially try to squeeze a 82 game season, which again seems very ambitious, don't you think? To try to fit the full season into, I don't know how they're going to do that. Like play fewer games.
Right. I guess they want to get the money back from what they lost, but like, whatever, just do the 66 game thing like they did in 2011, 2012. Like,
yeah.
Just do that. Like, because I just feel like it's just going to risk injury and stuff like that if you're trying to squeeze so many games into such a small schedule. Like, I don't know. So I think,
they're basically saying that they want to squeeze 172 game or 172 day schedule into like 150 days. So we'll see how it all plays out. I'm really fascinated to see like what's going to happen with player movement this offseason. Like, is there going to be massive player movement the way there really has been like the last three or four off seasons, where, you know, every year you got guys changing teams. I think like big names changing teams since at least the summer of 2017 and maybe even the summer of 16. So it's wild, but I don't really know what next year is going to look like for the league. Hollinger said they're likely to start on MLK Day, which is January 18th. I think that would be cool. That would be a little earlier than I'm expecting, actually, because I wouldn't be surprised if it was February. Some people are even saying March. So there's a lot up in the air. I'm very excited to see what the Bulls are going to look like next season and just like what next season looks like in general.
In terms of like player movement, like the fact that this free agency class kind of sucks, especially AD, assuming he does stay with the Lakers. Like, there's just not that many other big names out there. I think, like, you're looking at some guys in, like, the Raptors. I think, like, Danilo Gallinari will be one of the bigger names, like Fred VanVleet. If the Raptors look to, like, trade a guy like Kyle Lowry, I think he's going to be expiring. Like, I don't think they'd actually do that. But, and then you look at, like, other guys, like, who would be, like, on the market? Like, we talk about this in terms of, like, the Bulls making possible big trades. Like, which, like, superstars might be on the move? Like, I mean, Victor Oladipo is a popular name out there. The Bucks are not going to trade Giannis. It's just not going to happen, even if he doesn't sign the Supermax. I think they try to, at least, at worst, they give it one more run with him. And then if he leaves, maybe they get something in a sign and trade back. But, Victor Oladipo, like, Bradley Beal is an obvious name. But, I mean, I feel like the Wizards want to run it back one more time with John Wall and Beal, but I guess if someone puts a big offer on the table for Bradley Beal, I think you got to take it and just go into full rebuild mode in Washington. But like, other than that, like I'm not really sure what other big stars could be on the move. Like, I don't think Towns is moving yet. I don't think Booker's moving yet, especially with the Suns playing really well in the bubble. You look at a guy like maybe like Drew Holiday, maybe he goes somewhere. But like, I don't know. Am I missing anybody? Like, what other big names could possibly even be on the move this offseason?
I don't know. Zach LaVine.
Yeah, right.
In general, like, my takeaway is that it doesn't make too much sense to like guess all this now, because there's so much up in the air and we don't even know what the rules are going to look like, what the dates are going to look like. So I think it's too early to start talking about how the league's going to change after this.
And I was going to say the Sixers guys too. Like, I don't think they're going anywhere, especially with Doc. I think they're going to try to win with Doc at least for 1 year, and then maybe they trade Embiid or Simmons. But yeah. So yeah, I would not expect like crazy player movement this offseason. The Bulls, I mean, I think we've both said, but I think the Bulls kind of will wait and see what they have next season with a new coach with most of these guys. Like, maybe they trade one of these guys. Like, if anything, it would probably be Lowry. Like, I don't think Zach's getting traded. I don't think Wendell's going anywhere. I doubt Kobe's going anywhere after his rookie season. So, if anything, it's like a Lowry trade. But I think mostly for the Bulls, it's going to be maybe some tweaks around the edges. Like, again, veteran guys, maybe they trade a Thad Young, Satoransky, something like that. Some tweaks around the edges, maybe nothing huge. And I kind of think that might be what will happen around the league. But who knows? Like I said, who knows? Maybe it does get crazy and we see some big movement elsewhere. I don't know. But it'll be fascinating to watch. We've got enough here. You mentioned draft stuff. We will, with the draft coming up in about a month, we will obviously start ramping up that coverage again. We'll look at some others. We'll probably do some like individual profile guys. Like, we've obviously talked a bit about Killian Hayes. We talked about LaMelo. Maybe we go into some of these other guys coming up here. But again, draft for right now is scheduled for November 18th. I'm sure that I doubt that's going to change at this point. I think they got that pretty locked in, because then I think they want to start free agency, like I said, a couple weeks after that. Ricky, you have any final thoughts here before we wrap it up and sign off?
Not really. We can sign off.
Yeah. All right. Sweet. Yeah. So the NBA season finally over. 2019-20 NBA season is finally over after it's basically been a full calendar year. I think it was mid to end October when the season started. It is now October 12th, and the season is finally over after all this crazy time, the crazy stuff with the pandemic and all that. They pulled it off. They were able to finish the season. The Los Angeles Lakers are your NBA champion. We are now looking ahead to the Bulls. We'll see what they do this offseason. I mentioned the draft. It should be very interesting. But as for us at Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast, as always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Check out all the great pods. Check out our Lakers and Heat pods. All the great coverage around the NBA and all the other sports. We got with the NFL going. We got MLB playoffs going on. All this other stuff. Also, shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online. And for us, please rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. You know where to find us on Twitter. If there's anything you want to hear, especially coming up now that we're going to talk draft, but if there's anything else you want us to talk about, please shoot us questions, suggestions, give us feedback, please do. So for Jason and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Talk to you next time, guys.